Got it. Here we go with the John Curley, Sherry Alico show. Sherry out, Greg Tomlin in. After a harrowing drive in here, we had just enough time to get himself a taco or something.
Look on the video monitor. I look like I'm about 6'8". You look like you're about 6'1". I need to sit, I guess. It's unsettling. Hey, we're about equal height.
It's even more unsettling than now you're still taller than I am. Don't worry about it. Teeny tiny lady right over there. She's the smallest of the crew. She's in her pickle jar. We'll choose the letter of the day in just a little bit. Plus, apparently it is Thursday, and we'll find out if it is cocaine pizza day or not. We got a whole bunch of news to get through. Now we go! Well, Joe showed me this during the commercial break, that apparently the man accused of child rape in Bremerton was last seen jumping off the Narrows Bridge in 2009. He was presumed to be dead, but he was found in Los Angeles, still dead, but much older. And that's the whole story, Joe. Kind of blew
Thanks.
It there.
Didn't so leave moving any on.
Moving on that story.
No, this sounds like a Dateline episode. So, yeah, wanted on these sexual assault charges. And then this story has generated more questions in my mind than answers to this point. Okay.
That's good.
The details that we know is that it turns out this guy actually escaped, did not commit suicide in 2009, turned up dead just last month in Los Angeles. Earliest record they have him living there is in 2014, was a rather quiet tenant or something like that.
A maintenance guy, I believe.
A maintenance guy, yeah. And neighbors described him as a good maintenance guy and a big help. The investigation into the cause of his death is deferred. They're going to know in a few months here. I think the key person to interview before you totally close the case on this is the witness who said they saw him jump off of the Tacoma Narrows Bridge.
Right.
Right? Because that's all they had in terms of evidence that he committed suicide and a suicide note and his car was parked. Okay, so it's all circumstantial. I'm not a lawyer. I don't play one on the radio, but I think that's the correct term. So the witness at the time of his apparent suicide said he, quote, jumped without hesitation over the railing.
So that person would then be part of the conspiracy.
Potentially an accomplice in him getting away. Asking questions here. Don't want to say I'd make a great investigator, but...
Is the Tacoma Narrows Bridge, is that like a popular place for...
I mean, it's what, 240 feet high or something like that?
You're way up there.
It's
pretty good
dirty.
Pretty guaranteed.
Well, Aurora Avenue... 13, well, it used to be before they put the extra barrier up, but about on average, 13 people would jump off the Aurora Bridge.
Okay.
It's 100 and some feet. Listen, you hit the ground, you hit that water, it's like concrete.
Right.
But you're right. You would go to the person who was the witness to it. You'd want to find some sort of connection. The other thing is so he hit the water, they never found his body.
Yeah,
and then after
a
certain amount of time, then they say, well, there's no body.
Cold case, right?
So they drop the whole thing. Were there any insurance policies that were paid afterwards, or the guy just left to try to beat the charge on him? Because if it's when the insurance steps in, that's when they start to get a little suspicious of certain things and do more of an investigation.
The only mention I see of money here in this story is that he posted a $350,000 bail and then apparently, allegedly committed suicide, which was not the case in retrospect. Don't you think that stories like this make you wonder just how many criminals fall through the cracks of the justice system?
The gigantic cracks that we have here in King County?
Yeah. It's not something we like to dwell upon because it's an affront to, I think, people's sense of justice and longing for justice. But if this is one story we hear about, that means there are dozens, hundreds, maybe even thousands more stories just like this that go cold and are never solved. And that's kind of a troubling thought. We as news consumers like to think of things wrapped up with a bow or like the best Dateline stories that my wife and I would watch are ones where the episode would conclude and you would go, yeah, that made sense. Or they kind of had it coming to them, or they got involved with the wrong people. And so obviously that's going to be the result they get.
Yeah.
The worst Dateline episodes were the ones that were like random or that they still haven't caught the person. And it would conclude and you just have this deeply unsettled feeling like, this doesn't sit right with me. This isn't all is right with the world anymore. This doesn't make sense.
Right.
And so this is kind of one of those stories for me.
But you watch a Dateline one where they bring in the suspects and everything. And then they always do the thing, But what about the brother-in-law, Randy Thomas?
Yeah. Yeah.
And then and I'm sure the guy sitting at home, like, you know, 7 months later is like, I had nothing to do with it, right? But
pay off that. I had nothing to do with this, please. Don't tease that I had something to do.
She still owed him money. And maybe he needed that money. Right. And the guy, Randy, is like, I didn't need the money. It's like, and they always cut to the picture of him. And this is the only photo we have of him. So we'll keep showing it to you over and over and over
again. Did you have a Dateline phase? Oh. We had about a 2-year Dateline phase. But then when the stories involve kids or kids getting hurt, and then we had little kids of our own at home, I was just like, this is not entertainment to me anymore. This is like way too close to home. And then it makes you think, wait, should I have been indulging in any of this as entertainment? These are like deeply sad, morbid stories involving evil and like the worst type of heinous crimes you could imagine.
Well, and Sherry loves true crime.
She loves it.
And I do as well. And we have that in common that neither of us has children. So maybe that's a big part of it.
It is. I think absolutely. But
and she loves, who's the guy? Keith Morris.
Oh, he's a legend.
Yeah.
A legend.
I have a lot of dead people.
What? The drunk of a car, but she wasn't wearing
my head all night.
Yeah, and then he always does the, something. He was heading over to the Elks Club, or was he? It's always that, like, it wasn't going there. Yeah. And then you're like, oh, where was he going? And then he goes to another commercial break. But don't worry, if you missed it, you can watch it again because it's on 24 hours a day somewhere in the United States.
That's a pretty good impression, by the way. Eat your heart out, Bill Hader.
There you
well
go,
done,
Bill Hader. All right. By the way, if you want to fake your death, the best place to go is the Philippines.
Oh, 100%. I don't know. Why'd you say that?
I just looked it up.
Oh, okay.
Nice. Googleated it.
News you can use on the John and Sherry show.
I know a local woman whose husband faked his own death in Indonesia.
Don't we all? I mean, can you elaborate?
So he went scuba diving with his girlfriend. And then he did it twice, scuba dived two times with a girlfriend. They had the guy that took the boat out with, who was not in on this. So the girlfriend was in on this, and then they then went out without the scuba dive master, and they left extra supply of oxygen and a tank about 60 feet below. So they went diving again, and the third
with
time...
With the instructor the third
with
time.
With the instructor the third time, but they already left the tank there. Right. The girl said she didn't feel well and didn't go with him. She stayed in the boat, so he dove on his own. So she's there, and he goes, but I'll just go a couple. I'll just be fine. So he dove, and there was some rough seas and stuff, but dove down far enough. They waited till the water was a little rough and choppy, so you couldn't see the bubbles. And he just took off way far away from where the flags were and everything else. And he swam underwater as long as he could, and then he switched tanks, got another tank, and off he went. And then they paid off the medical examiner of not a large amount of money, but just enough. And they say, whenever you get a John Doe, a body that is, you know, not claimed, just get my name on that death certificate. And once you get the name of the death certificate from the county coroner or from the medical examiner, once that name is on there and you're deceased, they started the whole insurance process. And he was able to get a whole bunch of money.
What was he running from?
My goodness.
I don't know. I think he faked it because he... I don't know. But that's I didn't get that part of it.
Huh. And this was a buddy of yours?
No.
Hey, everybody! It's Sue Bell.
Okay, Sue Bell, she's fine. Sue Bell is like the appetite or that's the right. aperitif, or the aperitif. It clears the palate.
Yeah, palate closer.
Yeah, because then you get something.
No.
Right. Right. Or Sherry saying,
"I'll take the feces."
There we go. Fine.
Oh wow.
All right.
Beautiful segue.
Thank you. No, here's my favorite one. This is from the, is this in Georgia or is this New York or something?
The rats eating our marijuana. They're all high.
There you go, fine.
That was recently, wasn't
it? Yes, it was this week.
Yeah, the good stuff.
They got into the evidence
locker.
They
got the good stuff.
They ate it all.
Pineapple Express.
TikTok is probably, it's going to go back to the Senate. So they fast-tracked it through the House, goes up to the Senate. I think Charles Schumer does not want this thing to go through where they force China to sell to an American company. I think a couple of different people are looking to want to buy it, and they want to get the assets and then just disconnect China from TikTok, and then have the 7,000 employees that own part of it. There are 60% of it is also owned by United States.
International investors.
But the big thing is they want to snip the connection between China and the users, 170 some million users that are on there. So Manchin, who used to be the Treasury Secretary for Trump, he's in there. He wants to get a piece of it. And then I think, is it Microsoft that wants to buy it as well?
It's got a lot of suitors at this point. And the reason people are taking note is because it was such a sweeping victory in the House of Representatives on a bipartisan level, which seems sort of rare these days. But there's quite the consensus right now that something needs to be done about TikTok. Divest or die, basically, is the threat.
Yeah.
And so here's a Steve Mnuchin.
Well, you know, when I was Treasury Secretary, I chaired CFIUS, and CFIUS approved, and I had President Trump sign an order that TikTok had to be sold. And I continue to believe that. So I think the legislation should pass. And I think it should be sold. I understand the technology. It's a great business. And I'm going to put together a group to buy TikTok.
You're trying to buy TikTok.
I am, because it should be owned by U.S. businesses. There's no way that the Chinese would ever let a U.S. company own something like this in China.
Have you already put a group together?
No, I'm working
on it. You're exploring a group.
I've spoken to a bunch of people, but
who would be part of your group?
I can't tell that to you now, but it would be a combination of investors, so there would be no one investor that controlled this. And the issue is all about the technology. This needs to be controlled by U.S.
Let me ask you a very
Great technology, shrinking your brain and allowing you to have a whole bunch of dopamine and some really, really horrible ability to pay attention to anything longer than 60 seconds.
Here's my theory on this, John, and I want to get your take on it. See if you could poke some holes in it. Okay. We've long known that social media causes an exorbitant amount of problems for especially young people. TikTok is one of the greatest offenders, simply because of the nature of the app and also because there are hundreds of millions of people on it. There's something like 70% of young people get their news from TikTok.
Yes.
It's an absolute disaster. But furthermore, the app itself contributes in part to the mental health crisis going on with our youth. It's destroying people's self-image. It's causing a massive uptick in depression, anxiety, suicidal thoughts, and suicidal acts. We saw a tech giants testify before some congressional hearing the other day. Mark Zuckerberg was made to apologize in front of families who have lost loved ones due to social media. So there's a gathering storm, right? And there's going to start to be some regulation or backlash against some of these companies.
Mm-hmm.
The first bite at the apple is TikTok. But they didn't go after him for all the reasons I just mentioned.
No.
And it reminds me of what they got Al Capone on. They got Al Capone on back taxes.
Yeah.
He was wanted for gambling, prostitution, bootlegging, bribery, narcotics, protection rackets, and murder. And they go, we haven't really been successful getting him that way. Let's get him on the back taxes. Okay, sentence him to prison. So what's going on here is politicians know that it's going to be really hard to get these social media companies because of the free speech implications with their platforms. So instead, the low-hanging fruit is TikTok because they're owned by ByteDance, and ByteDance basically is subject to the CCP and their will.
Right.
You don't operate a company in China without having influence directly from the CCP, and the Chinese government, our adversary, has an incentive to make TikTok a hellscape for Americans.
Yes, I agree.
The TikTok in China is vastly different than the TikTok we use here in America. So if they end up divesting, if this vote succeeds in the Senate where it's on shakier ground, Americans will have to buy TikTok. And then I think once you have the influence in-house, so to speak, maybe it becomes a slightly healthier place to spend your time because you don't have a foreign adversary running it or collecting your data or doing God knows what with it.
So if you
poke some holes in that
theory. I'm with you. So if you assume that China creates TikTok, puts it into the United States and influences young people to think a particular way, and they are using it as a form of warfare. There's a perfect example of that is they put up on TikTok a letter from Osama bin Laden. Remember this whole thing?
Yeah, I do.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Hear the sound of the person. So they put it up and
letter to America.
A bunch of morons on TikTok. I know that's redundant, watched this thing and then started putting stuff up about how great Osama bin Laden is. Now, this comes from China. So if you really want to destroy sort of the fight in a young American, you make America out to be a horrible place. You create a bunch of division through race and economics. And then you put this type of propaganda out, like this person responding
this morning. I read Letter to America, which is Osama bin Laden's letter to America explaining why he attacked Americans.
Yes.
And I am ashamed to say that I not only have never read this letter, but I didn't even know this letter existed. Mm. It's wild, and everyone should read it. If you haven't read it yet, read it. However, be forewarned that this has left me very disillusioned, and I feel the same exact way I felt when I was deconstructing Christianity. I feel little bit just confused, like I have entered into another timeline. What is this?
Yes.
And yeah, so go read it.
Yeah, and a poll that was taken shortly thereafter, the number of people, young people, that were then sympathetic to Osama bin Laden had increased by like 38% of people or whatever. So they eventually took it down. But who put it up? China put it up.
And the way we die as a country is not by some foreign invading force and some land war and vice versa. We die ultimately by national suicide. And our adversaries know that. You have to make America kill itself because they're not going to be able to do
it. Right, because we're too strong. We've got too many
weapons.
And
so you play mind games and you get America's youth to start hating the country that they've grown up in.
Right.
And then all bets are off. It just takes one generation.
Well, you do the same thing Hitler did, but in reverse. You say, you know what? We would have won World War One, but the Jews didn't want us to. They controlled the banks and they stopped us. We could have kept. We could have won. We could have won. We lost. And the reason we lost because of the Jews. So guess what? We're going to start to close off some of the neighborhoods. Then we're going to put stars on them. And then we're going to ask you not to do business with them. And then slowly, we're going to start taking them away on trains. So you just take, but that's an example of pointing to one group in order to be able to take the group out in order to win. In this case, you just point and you make America like the Jews in Germany in the 1920s and 1930s. You make them the enemy.
Hold on, I'm pulling up a TikTok video here.
Okay.
So this guy, Hitler?
You hear this music?
He, like, made all these roads, like this thing called the Autobahn, and he, like, put a lot of people to work.
And he was a really good... He was great at watercolors, which is hard because, like, I took a watercolor class.
He had this cool mustache.
He was like, and he, you know, if he had gotten into art school, things would be a lot different. All right, Greg Talmadge, I don't know anything about this segment, and you don't either. This is all on Joe. Aaron, get out of here. This could
walking
go really,
in blind.
This could go really poorly.
Your mama
says here 5:33, segment two, audio. Jack does his best Curly impression on taxes. Shall
a whole we? Segment's going to be carried by that?
Well, we'll see. So Jack does a segment on his show called No Dumb Questions, and I believe somebody texted into the show saying, I'd like to hear you and John Curly talk about taxes. And Jack didn't extend you the invite for some reason, but instead went on to
imitate me?
Predict how your how
Aaron,
your
Aaron, quick, get out of here.
It's the highest form of flattery.
Or it's the easiest way to do radio.
Take your pick.
Wow, hold on.
It's crazy. It's groundbreaking. It's new. It's making history.
Yeah. Okay, you want to see?
I'm ready.
Is Jack doing an imitation of me talking about taxes?
It's less of an imitation, more of a paraphrase.
An homage.
So this is what I would say about taxes.
Correct.
If I were Jack's... Okay.
You're against them.
Jack, I want to hear you and Curly talk about taxes, please.
Oh, he added music.
So Jonathan Curly and I would have a spirited romp talking about taxes. But I know John very well. I love John Curly.
Oh,
one of the best friends I've ever had in my life.
Oh, here it comes.
John's take will basically be this if we talk about taxes. He's going to talk about all the waste. He's going to talk about the deficit. He's going to talk about how we shouldn't be taxed. He's going to take the libertarian kind of track on that. And he's going to be talking about how, like, government system's all bad. Very kind of libertarian.
Sure.
I kind of already know all the...
He's wrong on all that.
Let it continue.
Arguments to it. And so I feel like it wouldn't be so stimulating for John and I to talk about taxes. Because talking about taxes is basically you fall on two sides of it. Either you think that taxation is theft, which is the kind of libertarian or ANCAP, anarcho-capitalist perspective on it.
Okay.
That's it. That's his take, yeah.
Well, no. I thought he was actually going to do your voice or something.
No.
No, okay. So, but there are people that say that, which that was to pay off the debt from the war, right? So then they started, what amendment was that we brought in the income tax?
Oh, yeah, that
1917
one.
Or whatever. Okay. All right, so then here's Jack's take on taxes.
Or you fall on the side of, I live in a society in which there are inconsistencies in the economic outcomes for people at various levels of that society, and thus, to increase my own standard of living, I will take away a portion of my income to rise all boats. Does that make sense?
Absolutely.
And so if you are that kind of person, because I used to have that really ANCAP-y, taxation is theft. The state is my butt. I used to think that way in my mid-20s because that was developmentally appropriate. Eventually, eventually what you realize is that that because I want to live in a society where all human beings are treated with a certain amount of dignity, I am fine with my money going to those human beings.
Sure.
Now, if you want to talk about waste, that's a different issue. Mm-hmm. But what many people have done is they've conflated taxation with waste. And they've made them synonymous, which is a fallacy of equation. Does that make sense?
Yeah,
just because someone uses money poorly doesn't mean that that money could not be used properly. And so there is this constant haranguing that people do around taxation where they go, Americans are taxed too much, blah, 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 and they're super upset about it. When in actuality, there are entities out there that are actually not taxed that much. And that's why the tax burden is shifted onto a certain set of the population. That's going to be the middle class.
Give a bone to pick with that. Justice. The middle class
and above.
Makes sense.
And so just don't really understand how anybody could hold the position. I'm not saying that's John's position, but what I'm saying is I don't understand anybody could hold the position.
Wow. Just like that one worked up.
Position that we need to be quote unquote tax less as a society. If you're making under 100K a year, yes, absolutely, 100%. Me, the amount of money that I make, I don't really care. Doesn't make any difference to me. So that's
rich
the point
guy.
That I make to people.
Wow,
I'm more sympathetic to people complaining about taxes when they're making under 100K a year, especially in Washington State. When it's over 100K a year, I don't care about your complaints. Get over it. You don't know. You have no idea what it's like to be that poor where you've got negative $20 in your bank account and you have to withdraw more because your food stamps have run out. I have been there, and so to ensure that other people are not there, I'm fine paying taxes.
So taxes for redistribution of wealth. As a tax to pay for services, to fill potholes, to provide police and other services for us that we collectively
protection
all pay
and
for.
General welfare.
Right, right. And then there's also the redistribution of wealth. For a moment, if you were to close your eyes and imagine a church.
I've got it.
Federal government walks up the middle of the aisle and they've got a basket. Now they got to fill 100% of that basket. They go to the first 10 pews.
That's where the money is.
They now have almost 70%. They then continue back a couple of more pews, and by the time they get to halfway through the pews in the aisle, they've got almost all of it.
Mm-hmm.
The last 50 pews pay little or nothing.
Takers.
They also are takers. They get the most amount of redistribution of wealth. They get the most amount of welfare and housing and food stamps and everything else that goes with it. They're paid $2,000-some per kid, plus they're going to have an extra tax credit for more kids. If you want to have more kids, you get more money. But the federal government takes from the top 10. And when they say, well, how about in the 1950s when the top income tax was like 90-some percent? Well, nobody paid it. Like 130 people paid it or something like that. No one paid it. Everybody got out of it because they had so many loopholes. And they, Trump's tax cut benefited the wealthy. No, if $50,000 to $100,000, it was a 17% reduction. For those people, $100,000 to $500,000, they got a 13% reduction.
I got some money back.
That's the money
that.
Back. It's just simply, do you believe you want to you want to take it from one group and give it to another group, right? And then by giving it to the other group, are you incentivizing a certain type of behavior that is keeping that person poor? If you want less of something, tax it. If you want more of something, right, you incentivize it. And then you're going to get into Laffer's curve. And Laffer's curve is, if you tax it 100%, you get... Right. zero. But at a certain point, if you tax nothing, you get zero. If you tax it 100%, you get zero because no one's going to work. That's Laffer's curve, right? Mm-hmm. If everybody goes to work and you took 100% of all they made, you would have, eventually have nothing because no one would keep working. If you taxed and didn't take anything, you'd also get zero. That's Laffer's curve, is it? He says at about 38 or 39%, people begin to change their behavior depending on how much you're taking from them. Michael Medved, great quote. He said, what is the definition of a slave? It's somebody who works and receives zero in return. He said, if I work and I get 50% taken from me, am I half a slave? I remember Medved saying that like about 10 years ago. I thought, well, that is an interesting way of looking at it. So when you say, well, if you make $100,000, as Jack says, I don't have any sympathy for you if you complain. Well, it's not what you make, it's what you keep. What if you have $100,000, you're living in an expensive place like New York City, where 52% of every single dollar you make goes to the federal, state, and local taxes? Well, it's like, what do you got left at the end of the time? And how are you incentivizing work?
The only thing I'll add to this conversation is the buzz phrase of the day in terms of this conversation about taxes seems to be the term fair share.
Oh.
And nothing makes me more angry
than when I
hear that.
You probably know it.
Well, maybe I do, maybe I don't. What I'll say about that argument is the crux of the matter is none of us agree as human beings what is fair. We all have different definitions. So to just say that term as if it's dispositive and brings about the settlement of an argument is ludicrous. And there needs to be some healthy tension that includes a robust discussion about where that fair share is for each income group. And that's why this is a never settled conversation.
Thomas Sowell, what exactly is your fair share of someone else? What exactly is your fair share of what someone else has worked for?
Yeah, that's good.
Not fair. Both sides. Look, it's in Sweden, in Scandinavian countries, the middle class is taxed at like 65%. So you want that? You want to really tax the middle class? There you go. Wilcox Family Farm Eggs. What's for dinner? For lunch? Breakfast? Hard-boiled eggs from Wilcox? Oh, a little bit of salt on them? Come on.
Yes, please.
Yeah. Did you get a chance to look at some of the letters?
I did.
That's a trick question. They haven't arrived yet.
Who the hell are you to talk to fans like that?
Right. Here comes the mailman. Sorry to do that to you. I gotta keep you on your feet.
I gotta be ready for anything.
Anything at all.
I'm the mailman. As you can see, I'm the mailman. Don't nobody mess with me.
Right.
I'm the mailman. If you didn't know, I'm the mailman. I bring the mail to your door.
One more trick question for you. Did Diane do it? Yes or no?
Oh, absolutely.
Oh, it wasn't me. It was Diane.
You're right. All right. We'll get to the letter of the day, but first we'll take care of all the rest. You're up first.
Dave in the 206 Pi Day Factoids. Albert Einstein was born on 3/14/1879. Stephen Hawking died on 3/14/2018. What are the odds? Note that our resident fact checker Joe double checked, and these are both, in fact, true. It's also the day I got to fill in on the John Curley Show 2024.
There you go.
Very special.
Coming around. 4/25. Oh, my God. My face and my belly. They hurt so much from laughing. Great show today. Thank you. I needed it. I need this. Wow. Face and belly.
At least 8 exclamation points in that text. Thank you very much. Warren in Tacoma. As an ethically non-monogamous married person, I find these stories about the one in Las Vegas to be affirming. Monogamy should just die already. No more drama.
I asked, you know, Jacob, our previous producer. Jacob, you all right, monogamy died?
I have not ever. Nobody's.
All right. Thank you for that. Good. Fine. Yes. Good. Chris from Sumner says, have John tell the story when he went to the ER for, oh wait, now we're calling in requests for stories.
Wow.
No, I can't tell it.
What do you mean you can't?
It's too long.
Move on.
No, tomorrow. But not right now. Tomorrow. That's happening.
Tomorrow. Okay. Yep. Mark it.
Okay.
Kip in Lake Bay on the Mazda home run. John, that was one of the best stories you have ever told.
Oh.
Right up there with the Thanksgiving gravy story.
That's nice. That's well. Thank you, everybody. That was Fitz's story. Scott Fitz with the, so if you ever see the license plate, now you know. Wow. Wow, look at John upping his story game. I've been impressed for the last couple of weeks. Well, thank you, 402, with your mysterious area code, wherever, if that is your actual area code.
Barbara in the 425. I remember Spiedin Island. Am I pronouncing that
correctly? Spiedin Island, yep.
Spiedin Island. We would hear shots when passing on our trips to Roach Harbor. Really? Did I get that pronunciation right?
They were
right?
hunting? Yeah, you got that. Okay, they were good. Hunting over there? I guess hunting for goats. All right.
Nice one.
Brian, thank you. That's actually Nate laughing. Nate's other laugh. But the first one sounded like a goat. Brian from Kent says, I'm going to make a new sticker that says, John Curley told me to do it. Oh, hashtag HOV is a scam. That's good.
That's right. Fine. Try that in a court of law. Andrew in the 509, that mass HOV violation in real time is hilarious. I could hear the lead driver shout, they can't get us all.
That's right. Everybody get in line. Eric from Anderson Island says, you should do the story every day until the cops don't even pull people over. Oh, that'd be good.
On the 80s anti-drug campaigns, on the question on whether or not we need to resurrect them, Brad the Painter says, a DARE rep came to my high school in 1984 to give a speech about the dangers of drugs and alcohol. 2 hours later, he was at a party with me and my friends doing drugs and alcohol.
Is my pizza going to be covered in cocaine today?
Oh, that's a great question. You want to handle that one, Greg?
It depends on where you shop for your pies.
Let's the answer is yes.
All right. There you go. And now you know.
I just want to tell you, the first thing I heard was your voices, and it made me cry.
And now it is time for the letter of the day.
Letter of the day, that's you. Yeah.
That's all. You want me to read this one?
Yeah, it's you.
What an honor, Tom in Woodinville. I have to applaud you guys for today's show. I love Sherry and never laugh more than when she's on. But when Greg is in, I always feel like I'm learning something, too. And you guys really have been profound and interesting in your conversations. My goodness. Also, John, that baseball story was a thing of beauty. Who knew that you could hit a home run telling a story about someone hitting a home run?
Wow.
I hope Sherry gets to meet Sue Bell while she's in Palm Beach. She'll be happy to know what a great job Greg is doing keeping her seat warm. Exclamation point.
Wow.
Thank you, Tom.
How about that?
Hey, everybody. It's Sue Bell in Palm Beach. And I just want to show you one of my
whoop-de-doo.
Dresses. It's just so easy.
Okay, Sue, we don't care. Sue,
that's all she wrote.
That's all she wrote.
She's still talking about it. All right, bye, Sue. All right, Greg, we got another hour. Don't go anywhere.